Okay, for those who are wondering, I really do plan, Bli Neder, Bezrat Hashem, to cover all the topics in the title, for those who saw the title. And I really don't have a recipe for lasagna, I apologize. But other than that, I really do hope to cover everything, Bezrat Hashem. I'll be in a very concise way, a very focused way, and Rashi Prakim. And there's so much more. There's so many more examples and outgrowths and applications, but I want to give you just the tamtzit. Let's start with what I believe is the key to understanding Sefer Kohelet. Key number one, at least. The key. There are many keys, but this is key number one, and that is the following. It's really a fascinating illustration of something that everyone should be aware of. You know, we live in a time, for better or worse, of all kinds of translations. And you can find a translation of virtually everything and anything. And it's very important to be aware that if you don't learn the original text, you miss out. You miss out on the most important things. It's entirely possible to use a perfect translation. I'm not talking about the bad translations, of which there are plenty. But even if you use a good translation, you can read, learn, whatever it is, Sefer Kohelet in translation. It could be the most perfect translation in the world, and you're going to miss the Ikar of Sefer Kohelet. Okay, because it's not there. It's just not there in the translation. What do I mean? After the title of the Sefer, the title and author, right? Divrei Kohelet and David, Melech B'Yushalayim, we have the first real Pasuk, so to speak, the first content Pasuk, which is Pasuk Bet. It's a pasuk that is almost word for word repeated in the summation in Perek Yud Bet as well. In the beginning and the end, the same thing appears. And it's something that runs through the whole Sefer. It almost is a defining element of Sefer Kohelet, which is the word Hevel, right? Can't miss the word Hevel. It's everywhere. And whatever translation you're going to pick up, it'll translate it as futility or as frustration or as vanity or whatever you like. It's a very hard word to translate. No translation comes close to being perfect. But even if you hit upon a really good word for it in English and you're a really good translation, you miss the ikar. Because it is very obvious, it's very obvious that the entire Sefer alludes to, when it talks about Hevel, on the one hand it's talking about all those things, something that's nonsense, foolishness, transient, futile, whatever it is in each individual context. But most importantly, it's alluding to the story of Cain and Hevel. Okay, it's referring to the story of Cain and Hevel. And if you don't read in the original, you'll never even see the word Hevel, let alone have the opportunity to think about what it is that is actually being said. Okay? Cain and Hevel are alluded to throughout the entire Sefer. For many years, I looked for a Mefarish who said this, and I thought it was so obvious, but I couldn't find him. Until finally I saw that the Vilna Gaon, the Gran, his Hakdama to his parish on Kohelet, makes this point, although he takes it in a totally different direction. He has a more Kabbalistic understanding. But in any case, the Gran says that the entire Sefer is built on the story of Cain and Hevel. Again, he has a different explanation that I'm going to give for it, but to just point out very, very quickly, I'm not going to go through more than an example or two, but if you take a look at the next box, you'll see some of the places where the word Hevel is used very much in this way. Okay? For example, you want to see a clear example, Perakhet Pasuk Yudalit. Perakhet Pasuk Yudalit, bottom of this box. Yesh Hevel, okay, so I'm picking around. Yesh Hevel, Asher Nasala Aretz, Asher Yesh Tzadikim, Asher Magi Alehem Kamasei Arshaim, V'Yesh Rishaim, Asher Magi Alehem Kamasei Atzadikim, Amarti Shagam Zeh Hevel. Right, so clearly, here he's talking about Hevel, and what is Hevel? The fact that Tzadik V'Ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo, you look through Tanakh, what is the original example of this problem that is one of the main issues that Kohelet deals with, right? Tzadik V'Ralo, Rasha V'Tovlo, you have Hevel who brings the right korban, who does the right thing, Hashem favors him, etc. And what happens to him? He gets butchered. Cain, the first murderer, right, kills his brother in cold blood, does everything wrong, and what happens to him? Hashem protects him, shields him for seven generations, gives him the oath, etc., etc. Right? That's point number one. Point number two is, there's a second thing about Kohelet, and Kohelet belongs to that category of Sifrei Tanakh that is referred to as the Kvetchers. Okay, it's a technical term, you may not have come across it, but in any case, there are those Svarim that talk about, you know, how life is terrible. I'm not saying they don't have good reason to say that, but nonetheless, that's the category. Such as, what's the classical example? What? Eov, right? Eov, for example. There are many pieces of Svarim as well as entire Svarim, but Kohelet certainly belongs to that category. He talks about how life is terrible, and he has basically two complaints. By the way, Eov is very much connected to Kohelet, but that's a different share. The point is, referring to the Yerushalmi in the second parak of Chagiga, the point is that Kohelet has two basic problems with life. Right? Problem number one is, it's not fair. Right? That's one problem. It's not fair. It's not just the way what happens to the Tzaddik, to the Rasha. That's one issue. Issue number two is that we make progress in life. We move forward. We attempt to correct what's wrong with life. And all progress is wiped out, is cut short, whether on an individual or a collective basis, by what? What comes along and ruins everything? Death. Okay, excellent. Death. If you think about it, that's the story of Hevel, right? That's the story of Hevel. Number one, it's not fair what happens to Hevel versus Cain, Cain versus Hevel. That's number one. Number two, Hevel is bringing the right carbon. He is, you look at the Sefer Ikarim, Rabbi Yosef Albo talks about how he was correcting the mistake of Adam HaRishon, not for us right this moment, but it's clear that he was correcting the mistake of Adam HaRishon by bringing an animal sacrifice and correcting the mistake of Chava, all that. And what happens? We're moving in the right direction. The institution of Karbanot begins, because I'll talk about Adam HaRishon, but in terms of the Psukim, we have it the first time by Hevel, and it's all wiped out. He's killed, we have to start over again, right? And we have to wait till later, Noach, etc., until we begin over again, and we start again and again and again. Death comes and wipes things out. We start from the beginning. Those two problems of life are epitomized by Hevel. We have so many examples of, and again, I refer you just as three examples, the psukim that we have in this box. I'm not going to spend time on all of it because we have so much else to do, but there's so many things that point to the connection to the Cain and Hevel story. Why is that important? Why is that so central to the story to the Sefer Kohelet? So the reason it's so important, I believe, is the following. And this I would need many, many hours to show you this, but I believe that if you understand the following sentence or two, you'll understand every single part of Sefer Kohelet. Every single part of Sefer Kohelet, okay, again, this is a job for 20 hours, not for 1 hour, but if you go through section by section by section, Sefer Kohelet, there are many different topics, many different dimensions. They all are aspects of one idea. They're applications of one idea. What is the one idea? The one idea is like this. The story of Hevel can be understood, can be thought about in two ways. One way you can think about the story of Hevel is, in a word, Nebuch. Nebuch, you look at this poor guy. He does everything right. Hevel comes, he brings this wonderful carbon. Hashem approves of it. It's clear that he's doing everything right. And he gets murdered in cold blood. It's terrible. By his own brother, no less. And his twin brother, no less. And what happens in the end of the day? The murder gets away. It's just terrible. What a tragic, tragic story. It's so sad. What a loss. What a failure. The other way of looking at it, and I think that Kohelet argues that this is the correct way of looking at it, is that Hevel is a success. Hevel is a model of the successful man. What do I mean by that? You look at the end of Sefer Kohelet. What's the end of Sefer Kohelet? Perek Yud Bet, Pesukim Yud Gimel and Yud Dal. This is the bottom of, I'm sorry, this is the third, I guess the third box, sort of the middle of the first side of the sheet. Sof davar hakol nishma. Okay, in the end of the day, what's the bottom line? Sof davar hakol nishma. Et Elohim yirav et mitzotav shemor ki zeh kol ha'adam. what is the story of mankind? What is human life all about? And at the same time, what is Adam mean, and certainly Ha'adam mean in Tanakh, besides just mankind or human beings? What else does it mean? Adam HaRishon, right? Adam HaRishon. And every time you have Adam in Tanakh, even if it sounds like it's talking about mankind, and certainly it's Ha'adam, you have to consider that it very likely, if not for sure, is alluding to the story of Adam HaRishon. Okay, so let's take a look. And here it's clearly the case, because you look in Perek Yud, Pasuk Yud Dalet, Ki et kol ma'aseh ha'lohim yaviv mishpat al kol ne'alam im tov ve'im ra. Right? So we have here, what's the story of Adam HaRishon? The story of Adam HaRishon is the Eitz HaDa'at Tov HaRa. Right? The choice between Tov and between Ra. Adam HaRishon, meaning Adam and Chava, they choose Ra rather than Tov. Hevel chooses Tov rather than Ra. And that's what life is about. And therefore, Hevel, while it's certainly sad what happens to Hevel, not to take away from the fact that it's sad that he gets killed, but don't look at him as a tragic figure. Don't look at him as the sad story. Don't look at him as a Neba. Look at him as a hero. Look at him as a success. He achieved what we're put on earth to be, which is people who choose Tov rather than choosing Ra. Okay? Now, this is an idea that plays out in different realms. This contrast between the two perspectives on Hevel plays out throughout the entire Sefer in entirely different realms. I'm not going to go through all of them with you, but I want to show you one example. One example of a very different way that plays out. Yes? Okay, so I'm not going to go into the Cain Hevel story. I apologize, but just, we have enough topics for today. So, okay. I think what I'm saying is true, but I'm sorry that I'm not going to... Point is well taken, but okay. Let's look at a very interesting phenomenon in Kohelet. And there's a wild thing. This is something that anyone who reads Kohelet has to be bothered by this. You read Kohelet, and Kohelet talks at length in the beginning of the Sefer about the idea that there's no such thing as progress in life, right? That we don't move forward. There's no progress. Divrei Kohelet ben David Melech b'Yerushalayim, Havel avalim amar Kohelet, Havel avalim akol havet, Mayitron la'adam, b'chol amalo she'amol tachra shamesh, Dor holech v'dor ba, v'aretz l'olam omadet. It goes on to describe the whole cyclical nature of life, the cycle of wind, the cycle of the day and night, the cycle of the water cycle, right? From water to from rivers to seas to evaporating to clouds to rain and so on and so forth. And the end, he says in Pasuk 10, an incredible point: Ma shahaya hu sheyeh, uma shenasa hu sheyaseh, ve'ein kol chadash tachat Hashamash. Ain't called Chadash, Tachat Hashamash. There's nothing new. And you look around, so nothing new? Nothing new? I'll give you an example. When I had my first computer, I bought, must have been, about 25 years ago. Something like that. The time when it was like relatively, not so common for people to have their own personal computer even. Nowadays, who doesn't have their own personal computer? Right? Everyone has a laptop and, at least one. And of course, many, many other similar devices. But okay. Think about iPods and iPads and, tablets and all these things which didn't exist. But okay. And it was a desktop computer. It wasn't even a laptop. It was a desktop computer. I don't think they had laptops in those days. Laptops are relatively recent. And I had this computer. And I had a neighbor. I had a neighbor of mine who was a computer programmer. Okay, he wasn't a Stom guy. He was a computer programmer. So he was an expert in the field. Right? Whatever, he was a professional. And he came over to my house. I had just recently bought a second hard drive for my computer. And I installed it, and I was very excited about it. And the second hard drive was 1.5 gigabytes. 1.5 gigabytes. and he looked at my, you know, computer, which now had slightly over, just a 0.1, over 2 gigabytes of hard drive space. And he said to me, this was a computer programmer, he said to me, "You're never, ever going to need more memory on your computer for the rest of your life." And thank God he was wrong. I lived longer than that. But that was amazing. Like, you know, he was just like salivating, 2 gigabytes, right? And now, if on your keychain, you know, the little thumb drive that you have, if it has less than 8 gigabytes, you know, why would you bother buying such a thing, right? At least 8, if not 32 or more, right? 64 something. I mean, what are you going to do with 2 gigabytes? That's not even spare change. The whole computer, when I got my computer, it had 4 megabytes. Not gigabytes, megabytes of RAM. Okay? And that was considered standard. And I upgraded to 8 megabytes of RAM, and then it was really speedy. And now, at 4 gigabytes of RAM, and, you know, do I need to upgrade or not? You know what I'm saying? Like, when I was, you know, in Israel for my year in Israel, so there were no such things as cell phones or instant messages or email. Writing a letter home and getting back an answer didn't take 3 seconds. In a good month, that means if there was no Shvitah, and there was always a Shvitah, but if there was no Shvitah, the post office wasn't on strike, it took 4 weeks to get a response. Sent one of these blue, you know, letters, and you got back 4 weeks later, if you were lucky. And to call, you know, calling home, I think I spoke to my parents maybe 3 times during the year that I was in Israel. You had to stand online at this, like, one payphone with a simonim, with these tokens that you bought at the post office and kept on putting in, and you waited online behind everyone at 2 o'clock in the morning. That was it. A few times during the year, maybe 3-4 times I spoke to my parents the whole year that I was in Israel, aside from letters, you know, wrote back and forth, and that was it. And now, you want to speak to someone on the other side of the world, it's pretty close to instantaneous. There's no progress. Ein chadash tachar hashamesh. When in my childhood, certainly my parents' childhood, you know, polio was this dreaded disease, amongst many others. And there are people today, victims of suffer from the effects of it. And then for decades, now there's a return, a fear of return of polio to some degree here in Israel, and they're giving, you know, and people are asking, my kids are asking, what exactly is polio? We've never heard of this before, right? So many things that from, you know, cures for diseases, technologies that didn't exist, means of transportation that didn't exist, communication, and so on down the line. How can someone else say, "Ein kol chadash tachat hashamesh"? What does that mean? Is that a legitimate question? It's a pretty powerful question. And progress didn't begin 20 years ago. It certainly, the rate of it has speeded up tremendously, but it didn't begin 20 years ago. And alongside that question, there's another related question, which is, that on the one hand, Kohelet speaks about the idea that Chachma doesn't really help, that Yosef Da'at, Yosef Mach'ov, that there's nothing, no difference between the fate of the Chacham and the Ksiel, that there's no difference in terms of having Chachma, not having Chachma. And then at the same time, he says, V'ra'iti ani, bottom of the page, Perek Bet, Pasuk Gimel, V'ra'iti ani sheyesh yitron l'chachma min ha'sichlut, ki yitron ha'or min ha'choshach. Does Chachma help? Does it not help? It seems to be an ongoing contradiction, back and forth and back and forth, throughout Sefer Kohelet. So I'd like to suggest a very simple answer. It goes back to the story of Hevel, believe it or not. It all goes back to Hevel. The question is like this. So again, returning to my childhood for just a moment. Sometime in the 1960s, I think it was, there was this magazine article that I read. I wish I had saved it because it was fascinating. But I didn't. so you're going to have to just do it from memory. But there was this article, I think it was in Life magazine. And they had this article about how they envisioned life in the future. What was life going to be like in the future? The future meaning the 1990s. Okay. The distant future. Okay. Anyway, so the 1990s. And they described how the prediction was that by the 1990s, there's going to be no more traffic, no more congestion, no traffic, no more issues with finding a parking spot, no parking issues. The average adult, they said, would have about 10 hours of leisure time a day. Now, I don't know who they were talking about, but I can tell you we are past 1990s. We're in, you know, 2013, whatever it is, and I get very excited when they change the clock and we get an extra hour, you know, because, wow, that's like a lot of free time, right? It's the only time you have free time, that extra hour. 10 hours a day of leisure? Look, where they get... What's very interesting is the following. This, I think, is an idea. You read Sefer Kohelet, and Ezra Hashem, we're all going to read Sefer Kohelet over the next couple of weeks. Listen very carefully, because this is an idea that I think resonates throughout Sefer Kohelet again and again and again. There are two halachah. There are two issues. One issue is local progress, and the other is global. Meaning like this. If you want to discuss methods for curing disease X or Y or Z, or doing a particular task, washing laundry, getting from here to New York, speaking to your parents or your friends who are halfway across the globe, there's no question. Incredible progress. Ki yitron ha'or min ha'choshech. Chachma helps us so much. But at the same time, one can pick up a work of Shakespeare from several hundred years ago, or even a novel from 1,000 years ago, or read a sefer in Lahavdil, you know, from thousands of years ago. And you know what? You read something about life. You can read, for that matter, Homer. You can read whatever it is. You read things about life from hundreds or even thousands of years ago. And although we made so much but the basic facts of life remain the same. There's still poverty, and there's still wars, and there's still death, and there's still jealousy, and there's still loneliness, and there's still fear, and there's still all the issues, all the same things, and all the things, disease, death, they all still exist. They all still exist. We've cured so many diseases, but people still get sick, and people still suffer, and people still die. We're able to do so many things so much faster. And we don't have any more free time. Maybe we have less than we did 30 years ago. The basic game of life has not fundamentally changed, even though the details have changed to an incredible degree. And that's what it means, Ein Kol Chadash Tachas Shamesh, that Dor Holech V'Dor Ba. It's a totally different generation. Totally different generation. Even within one generation, things change so much, but yet at the same time, the basic nature of life doesn't change. The Ein Kol Chadash Tachas Shamesh. So let's say that I'm someone who researches, I'm a medical researcher, Nagid, okay? I'm a medical researcher. And I find a cure for a certain disease. I can look at it two ways. I can say, wow, I've cured this disease, I've eliminated this disease, people aren't going to die from this, aren't going to suffer from this anymore. Or, I'm a doctor, I cure this particular patient, whatever the case may be, I eliminate their suffering, I help them with... Or, I'd say, you know what? And people are going to stop dying, people are going to stop being sick. Have I really changed anything in life? Have I really moved the world forward? Is there really a difference in the world because of what I've done? Or I am a social worker, or I'm just a stomp person, and I go over to someone, I help them with some problem they have. Someone's upset, they're depressed, I talk to them, I make them feel better, I help them with a particular issue that they have. Great, I've solved a problem. But have I really changed? Aren't they still, they're not going to have problems anymore? And other people aren't going to have problems? And did really, have I really changed life? Have I really... And that's the point. How I look at progress, how I look at accomplishment, how I look at achievement, how I look at life, is radically different if I look at the story of Hevel one way or I look at the other way. I can say Hevel is a failure. He's a Nebuch. It's such a sad, tragic story because he tries to move the world forward and look, he gets cut off, he gets killed, and nothing comes of it. And we're still left with all the same basic issues of chait and onish and death, b'chulei b'chulei. Or I can say, no, Hevel's success because in terms of what he did, in terms of what was going on with him, he did tov. If I cure someone, if I make them feel better, if I do something to make their life better, I've done tov. And that's what life is about. And that's the proper way to look at it, says Kohelet. Kohelet is an incredibly optimistic book about life, despite the fact that it presents many, many questions and problems and issues. But in the end of the day, it's very, very optimistic because it tells us you have to look at life the right way. If you don't have the right expectations for what success means, if you don't understand that success means doing good, if you don't understand that success means doing the right thing, if you don't understand that success means doing tov, choosing tov rather than ra, then you can't ever be happy with life. Because you're always going to say, well, what did I accomplish? Life doesn't change. And this, I think, is one of the essential threads in Sefer Kohelet. And we will come back to it and see it on a deeper level, Be'ezer Hashem. But to begin with, that's point number one. Let's turn the page. Let's put everything we learned so far on the back burner. And let's move to a totally different facet of what we're going to discuss. So, the next thing I'd like to try to do is address two very difficult questions, at least. Maybe three. Three difficult questions. Let's go for three. Three difficult questions. Question number one is, what is the meaning of Paraduma? Don't throw anything at me. You'll understand, hopefully, by the time we finish. What is the meaning of Paraduma? What's the reason for Paraduma? That's question number one. Question number two is, Shlomo HaMelech, you read the simple reading of Sefer Melachim, you read the story of Shlomo HaMelech, and Shlomo HaMelech, let's face it, is he a great success? Does he do everything right? Is he such a sterling role model? You look even what Chazal say about him. The simple answer is, no, but not by a long shot, right? You look at what the Nabi says about Shlomo HaMelech, and Shlomo HaMelech, in the end of the day, all the things that a Melech is commanded to do or not do, every one of them he gets wrong. Right? Every one of them. He violates every mitzvah of Melech. Every one of them. And the Navi says so explicitly, right? It says that he ends up doing a Rabbe Nei Hashem. And he doesn't attach himself to Hashem as David HaMelech did. And so on down the line. Which raises two very important questions. Question number two in terms of these three. The first question about Shlomo HaMelech that I want to ask is, you look at Sefer Kohelet. Sefer Kohelet is essentially, you know, if I were trying to decide, if it weren't part of my Tanakh, right? Let's say that Kohelet were a separate volume. I was trying to decide where my Beis Medrash am I going to stick Sefer Kohelet? If it weren't part of Tanakh, where would I put it? I mean, there are several possibilities, but I think the first place that I would put my copy of Sefer Kohelet, I have my different sections. I wouldn't put it in my halacha section. I wouldn't put it in my Gemara and Rishonim section. I would put it in my... Where would you put it? What section would you put it in? What? No, I'm saying, if it weren't in Tanakh, not... Forget about that, it's in Tanakh. Where would you put... What kind of book is it? What? I put in my Musar, with my Musar Svarim, right? It's basically a Musar Sefer. It tells you how you should live life, right? He's telling you how he thinks. And I feel like saying, Shlomo HaMelech, you're telling me how to live? You're telling me how to live? You're giving me Musar? Are you in a position to give me Musar? You were such a success that you're giving me Musar about how I should live? You understand what I'm saying? That's one thing that bothers me about Kohelet. Question number three that I like to deal with. I'm going to deal with these three more or less together. Third question is, it's such a strange thing. You look at Paragimel of Sefer Melachim. the famous story of Shlomo HaMelech and his dream, right? The vision that he has. Hashem appears to him and says, what would you like to ask for? And he's given the, you know, choice of anything he'd want. And he chooses Lev Shomea, right? He chooses to have the ability. He says, V'natat l'avdecha, perakimo pasuk tet, V'natat l'avdecha, Lev Shomea, l'shpot et amcha, l'avin, bein tov l'ra, ki mi yuchal l'shpot et amcha, akaber hazeh. He wants to choose between Tov and Ra, he wants to choose the right thing, he wants to do the right thing. This is, he could have had anything in the world, and that's what he wants. How does he go so wrong? How does he fail so miserably with such great intentions? How does that happen? It's such a strange story. It's such a sad story. So I'd like to try to address these three questions with you. I'd like to start with a famous Chazal. Okay, let's start with the famous Chazal. Chazal say as follows, Bamidbar Rabbah, it appears in many places in slightly different versions, but here's the Midrash. Okay, top of the page. Zot Chukat HaTorah. What's Zot Chukat HaTorah talking about? Paraduma, right? It's talking about Paraduma. Parashat Chukat, Paraduma, beginning of Parashat Chukat. Zot Chukat HaTorah. Rabbi Yitzchak Patach. Kol zeh nasiti b'chachma, amarti achkama, v'hi rechokah mimeni. Ktiv v'yitein Elohim chachma l'shlomo. What is the Midrash basically saying? Shlomo HaMelech says, I thought that I could attain chachma, right? That's what Shlomo HaMelech asked for initially, for this great chachma. He said, I thought I could attain wisdom. I thought I could understand everything until I got to the mitzvah Parah Aduma, v'hi rechokah mimeni. It's way beyond me. I don't understand Parah Aduma. Okay? The way that this Midrash is usually understood, and I think it's a superficial reading of the Midrash, I don't think it's what it's really saying, but the way that people tend to understand this Midrash is what? That Shlomo HaMelech says that I try to understand the ta'amim of all the mitzvot, I get to Parah Aduma, and I give up. I throw up my hands, I give up, I don't know what it means. I don't understand, I can't explain. Zot Chukat HaTorah, it's a chok. But I don't think that's what the Midrash means. I think the Midrash has a much, much deeper meaning, which I'd like to share with you, but we need to do it one step at a time, and we can only do it once we understand something about Shlomo HaMelech, and we understand something about Parah Aduma. In order to do that, we have to understand something also about Tumah V'Tahara. Something about Tumah V'Tahara. And let me begin by asking a fourth question at the same time, which is, what does the word tamei mean? This is not the question. This is just a build-up to the question. What does the word tamei mean?
Impure.
Impure. Impure. Okay. What does the word tahor mean? What? What does the word tahor mean? Okay. Not a bad start. Now let me ask you a question. If I'm told that the Mishkan they use zahav tahor, as it says, right? Zahav Tahor, pure gold. I know what pure gold is. Pure gold means that it wasn't adulterated by other substances. It's only 100% gold. It's not other things. Right? It's not 10%. It's gold. Okay, I understand what Zahav Tahor is. Uke'etzem hashamayim letohar, like when you have a pure sky, it means that it's, you know, no smog, no clouds, not clear, right? Only the sky. I understand what that means. Uke'etzem hashamayim letohar. The Seder. If I have pure orange juice, I know what that means. It means it's just orange juice. In Seder Taharot, right? If I open up Mishnayot, Seder Taharot, or I open up Sefer Vayikra, and I read that something is Tahor. It's pure. It's pure what? It's pure from what? What does it mean? We use these terms all the time. What does it mean? What does it mean that something's Tahor, that something's Tameh? So you'll tell me, well, tahor means that it doesn't have any tumah. And tumah, what's tameh? It means that contains not tar, it has tumah in it. But I'm not getting any place, am I? Right? That's a little bit circular. What does that mean? You know, we always talk about tumah and tara. What does it mean? What is tumah and what's tara? Right? Pure what? Impure. Impure with what? What's it talking about? So I'd like to suggest the following understanding of Tumah, Tahara, and Paraduma. Okay, let's start with Tumen Tahara. But I have to kind of shoot a tremendous, tremendous amount at you in very, very few minutes. So, like, we're going to do this very, very fast, right? So just Mamash Roshei Prakim. I'm just going to give you the headings of the chapters, and that's it. Just very, very fast. Many, many Mefarshim from early, early Rishonim down the line, hints in Chazal and really in Tanakh. But it's pointed out already by early Rishonim and on through the Achrom that the idea of Tumah is associated with the idea of death. Okay, that's Dever Pasha. That's something that you find in so many sources. That Tumah is basically a symbol of death. It's a representation of death. Avi Avot HaTumah, the ultimate Tumah is death, right? And you go through all the things where you have Tumah, they're all outshoots of this idea. They're all applications of this idea. Just to give you one fascinating example, and I'm sure you've heard the idea that I just mentioned before, but I just want to give you an example that you might not have, and I think it's a fascinating example. When a woman gives birth, right? When a woman gives birth, there is a period of time during which she is Tamei, and the period of Dam Torah and Dam Tuma, and the period of Tuma and Tara that follows. Okay, without getting into all the technical details, but basically it's a period of Tuma and Tara. If the child is male, there are 7 days of Tuma and 33 days of Tara. I assume you know this, right? Parsha says we are. If it is a female child, it is doubled. There are 14 days of Tara instead of 7, and there are 66 days instead of 33. Okay? One time, Baruch Hashem, I've had the opportunity to be there when my wife gave birth many, many times. And one of the many times, and I will confess, I don't remember which time it was, but one of the times that, after a while, it runs together a little bit, as special as each one was, but nonetheless, one of the times that my wife gave birth, I remember right afterwards, she turned to me and said, you know, it's such a strange feeling. It's such a strange feeling. This was a few minutes after giving birth, and she was holding the baby. She goes, it's such a strange feeling to at the same instant feel so full and so empty. On the one hand, I've been carrying this child inside of me for 9 months, and now all of a sudden, gone. I don't have a child inside of me anymore. And it's such an empty feeling. And at the same time, it's such a full feeling that here's this new person that didn't exist a few seconds ago that I'm actually holding. There's this gain and loss of life that takes place when a woman gives birth. And that's represented by this idea of Tuma and Tara. There's a greater measure of Tara, 33 days, then Tuma, 7 days, but there's an element of both. And if that child is also capable of carrying life, then that gain and loss is thereby doubled. Okay? And therefore, instead of 7 and 33, it's 14 and 66. In any case, it's just an illustration. You go through every type of Tumah, Mitzorah, Kameit, right? Gemara and Nedarim, it's based on Pesukim in Malach Mal, Perek Hay, and based on Pesukim in Bamidbar, etc. We have so many examples. So many, every single type of Tumah is associated with death in some way. Or loss of life, at least. Loss of potential life, v'chule. Okay, that's not a Chiddush. But put it on the back burner for a moment, and you'll see why it's important. When is Tumah relevant? When is Tumah relevant? We're all Tamei. Do we care? Does it matter? Sitting here in this room, you know, being involved in learning learning an inyan, we're learning, does it matter if we're Tamei at Tahor? It doesn't matter. When does it matter? The Rambam, what does he call the laws of Tumah Vitara? Calls them Tum'at, Hechot Tum'at, Mikdash, V'Kadashav, right? In other words, Tumah is relevant in terms of the Mikdash, or the Mishkan, the Mikdash, and things associated with the Mikdash. Kahuna, Karbanot, things that are offshoots of the Mikdash. But it's basically associated with the Mikdash. And what is the Mikdash? So I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. We need many hours for this as well. But the Mikdash, what is at the core of the Mikdash? What's the center of the Mikdash? What's in the core of Mikdash? I can't hear the core of Mikdash. What? What's the center of the Mikdash? What's in the Aron? Good. And what's the apex of the Aron is the Shekhinah. Where's the Shekhinah located? To the degree you can say that. Where's the Shekhinah located in the Mishkan? But where in the Mishkan? Where Hashem speaks to Moshe? From where? Between the Kruvim. Where the Kruvim come from? I'm not hearing. Kruvim, where do we first meet the Kruvim in the Torah? Gan Eden. When Adam and Chava are kicked out of Gan Eden, Vayashkein. Right? Vayashkein. The same word as Mishkan. Vayashkein et ha-Kruvim vetlat ha-Cherev ha-Mitapechet. Say, number of the Rikanati, for example, one of the 16th century Kabbalists in his Parash on Chumash, the Rikanati quotes a Midrash. It said, where Chazal say that the term that Vayashkein et ha-Kruvim vetlat ha-Cherev ha-Mitapechet, that Vayashkein ha-Shom Mishkan, that the Mishkan, the Mikdash, the Kruvim, this represents the entrance back into Gan Eden. And this is really reflected in many places in Tanakh, Chazal, so on down the line. The point is as follows. That the Mikdash represents coming back into Hashem's presence. The Mikdash represents the guardians of the way back into Hashem's presence, back into Gan Eden, or the Kruvim. We're going back into Hashem's presence, back into the state before the Chait of Adam HaRishon, and therefore, follow very carefully, therefore, what happened when Adam and Chava were Chote? What was brought into the world? What was brought into the world? Tumah, in other words, death, right? Death was brought into the world, right? B'yom HaChacham Imenu, Mot Tamut, even the Tzadad, and brings mortality. And therefore, what has to be kept out of the Mishkan and the Mikdash? Tumah, right? Tumah. That's why no Tumah in the Mishkan and Mikdash. Everyone with me so far? Go one step further. What does it mean for something to be Tahor? Means that's the way the world was originally created, right? The original pure creation, without chait, without mavet, without death, without sin, that pure, pristine creation, that's tahara, that's the pure, original form. And tumah is the adulteration of that with death, with sin, etc. Okay, that's what tumah and tahara is all about. Which brings us to the paraduma. Everyone ready for the reason for Paraduma? Here we go. This is the time of the Mitzvah Paraduma. Okay? I'm not joking. I'm serious. I'm really serious. I know we all learned Zot Chukata Torah, that's a chok. It is a chok. And that's the point. Please listen very carefully. What happens in Gan Eden? Okay? What happens in the Chait of Adam HaRishon? What do Adam and Chava do? So basically, in its simplest form, the Torah says that by eating from the Eitz Hadat, v'yitem keluhim yod'ei tov hara, hein Adam haya kecham imenu lada'at tov hara. Adam and Chava choose, they decide, they're going to decide what is tov and what is ra. They're taking the place of God. You look at Perek Aleph of Bereishit, and it talks about Vayar Elokim Ki Tov. Again and again and again, God defines what's Tov and what's Ra. We come to the story of the Eitz Hadat, Perek Gimel. Vatera Ha'isha Ki Tov. Right? She takes the place of God, and she's got to decide what's Tov and what's Ra. It's not what God said is right and wrong. It's what she feels is right and wrong. It's what Adam feels is right and wrong. They're going to take the place of God and decide what's Tov and what's Ra. That's the Eitz Hadat. That's Chait. What happens in Para Aduma? Watch carefully. Para, right? Cows are associated with what in Chumash? With Chait, right? Par, Chatat, all over the place. The Egel HaZahav, right? There's an association between cows and Chait all over Chumash, all over Tanakh. Aduma, what is Adom associated with? Right? Yishayahu Perek Aleph, for example, Im Yu Chateichem, Kashani, Kashel, Yabinu, Yadimu, Katola. What's associated with Chait? Right? With Chait. The Para Aduma represents Chait. And the Para Aduma, the May Para Aduma, the May Nida, the Para Aduma water, ash, the water of the Para Aduma, right? The word sprinkle, the word comes from the QR, the mixed with the ashes of the Para Aduma, this combination, the Mei Chatat, Mei Nida, that are sprinkled on the person who's Tamei, that is Mitamei, right? It's Mitamei. Now, I mentioned a different class, I believe, and I'll mention it again, just for those who weren't there and missed out, so I'll just tell you very quickly that for all of those of you who think that the Kohen who sprinkles the Para Aduma water on the Tamei becomes Tamei himself, so go back and learn it again because you got it wrong. So that's a very common misconception, but it's not true. It's not true. The person who sprinkles the Para Aduma water does not become Tamei. Okay? He does not become Tamei. Take a look at the Gemara Nida, take a look at Rashi on the Psukim in Parashat Chukat, take a look at the Rambam, you'll see it's not true. But it is true that the Mei Chatat, the Para Aduma, you know, formula, the what is sprinkled on, is Mitamei, but not the Kohen who sprinkles it. Okay, but it is Mitamei if you carry it stam. Now, listen very carefully. What do we do? The Torah says, please take a look at the bottom of the page. Bamidbar Perek Yutet, the Torah says that we take a Para Aduma. We take a Para Aduma. And this Para Aduma, which is Mitamei, right? This Mei Chatat of the ashes of the Para Aduma, which is Mitamei, what do we use it for? What do we use it for? It says very clearly, Pasuk Chaf, V'ish asher yitma v'lo yitchata. What does it mean, yitchata? To remove the idea of chait. Okay, yitchata is the removal of chait. In order to be mitaher him. Ki mikdash Hashem timei meini dalo zarak alav tamehu. It tells us in Pasuk Chaf Aleph that the mei nida, this water of the kiyor together with the efar paraduma, is mitamei. Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So please listen very carefully. We want to take this person who's Tamei, and Tuma is associated with death and with Chait. It represents this idea of Chait and its consequence, death. And we want to remove it. We want to remove this idea of Chait and Tuma. And what do we use to remove it? Something that represents Chait, and that is Mitamei. That's why it's a chok. Because it is counterintuitive. Because from the point of view of human reason, it makes no sense. If you have a stain on your white blouse, you don't take dirt to rub on it in order to clean it. It doesn't work. You can't clean clothing with mud. It doesn't work. That's not how you clean. You want to take something, you want to remove tumah, you don't take something that is mitameh. And if you want to remove chait, hu yitchatabo, you want to remove this idea of chait, you don't take something that represents chait, a para aduma. But, what does the Torah say to us? If you want to remove tuma, what you have to do is to do what I am being mitzaveh, says Hashem, even though in your mind it makes no sense and it's the opposite of what you would think should be done. Because in order to represent the idea that we are moving in the opposite direction of Adam and Chava, that we are not following that model of Chait and Tuma, what needs to be done? We need to show that we're accepting Hashem's definition of what's Tov and what's Ra, what's Tameh and what's Tahor, even if it contradicts our understanding of it. And by doing that, by using this para aduma, which represents chait, to remove chait, because the Torah said so, by using this efer para aduma and the mechatan, which are mitameh, to be mitaher, because the Torah told us to do that, we are thereby negating the idea of tumah. We're thereby removing this chait, removing this tumah, removing this concept of the chait of Adam HaRishon by doing that. Okay, and that, I think, is why, at the same time, paraduma is the ultimate chok, meaning, within the box, it's absolutely true. If you look at it in its own terms, it is counterintuitive. It goes against all logic and reason. It doesn't make sense. It's an ultimate chok. It's because Hashem says, do it, so we do it. But that's dafka why, if you look in a broader perspective, it makes so much sense that that's the response to tuma. Torah says, what did Adam and Chava do? They said, Vatera Ishaki Tov. Hashem says to us, forget about what you think is Tov. What's important is what I think is Tov. And this is, of course, the end of Sefer Kohelet. Sof Davar, Kol Nishma, Et Elokim Yirab, Mitzotav Shemor, Kizek Kol Adam. Let's return now to Shlomo Melech for a moment. Let's return to Shlomo Melech and let's try to wrap it up. What do we have left besides lasagna? Okay, we're almost there, almost there. Let's go a step further. What happened to Shlomo HaMelech? How did he end up where he ended up? What happened to him? He had such good intentions, such good motives. And the answer is very simple, I believe. I'm throwing out a suggestion. The only way I can make sense of Shlomo HaMelech is like this. You look at what did Shlomo HaMelech want to do in his life? He wanted to do several things, and they were all incredible goals. He wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash. He wanted to establish Malchut Beit David. He wanted to create a situation where Eretz Yisrael would be secure and prosperous and under Jewish control. Wonderful, wonderful utopian goals. Right? He wanted to create everything that we dream about, everything that we strive for. And what's more, in the short run, he achieved every one of those goals. Every one of those goals. He did establish Malchut Beit Av, and he did build the Beit HaMikdash, and he did create an era of tranquility and security and prosperity unparalleled. Unbelievable accomplishments. That's what he wanted. He didn't want power for himself or wealth for himself. He wanted to do incredible things for Am Yisrael. He wanted to incredible things for Hashem, incredible things for Torah. Unbelievable. But there was one problem. The problem was that in working towards those incredible goals, in focusing on those very lofty ends, he was prepared to cut a lot of corners, take a lot of shortcuts, and not be so concerned about the means by which he did it. And so if the Torah says, you can't be Marbelo Nashim, Marbelo Chesev, and Susim, and you can't do this, you can't do that, no, but okay, you know, so technically not, but look, look at the greater goal, look at where I'm headed, look what I'm trying to accomplish. And he does. But it all comes down to the question of Hevel. Is life about what we accomplish, or is life about the type of decisions and actions and how we live? And that's why it's so central to Sefer Kohelet. You see, Shlomo HaMelech is not turning to us in Sefer Kohelet and saying, I'm so smart, I've got all the answers, I did it all right, I'm so great, listen to me, I'll tell you how to live your life. I don't think that's true at all. Kohelet, if you read Kohelet carefully, it's very, very autobiographical. It's also written at the end of Shlomo HaMelech's life. Shlomo HaMelech in Mishlei talks about Eshet Chayil. No, you may have heard this passage before, right? Eshet Chayil, Mi Yimsa, right? Looking forward, right? He's looking. Eshet Chayil, Mi Yimsa, where am I going to find this ideal woman that I'm looking for, again, without getting into all the details of what he was looking for, who he was looking for, but not concerned right now, but Eish HaChayim Yimsa, back in Mishlei. But now, what does he say in Kohelet? V'isha Bechol Eile Lo Matzati. Right? He's already failed. He's already looked. She's not there. He looked, but we look in the wrong places. But he failed. How many did he look? How many did he look through? Whatever the syntax is, forgive me, a little tired. But how many attempts? How many does he say? 1,000, right? Adam echad me'elf matzati bisha b'chol eil lo matzati. Why 1,000? He had 1,000 wives. But that's the end of the story. That's not the beginning of the story, right? He's looking back. He's saying, whoa, I failed. Shlomo Melech turns to us at the end of his life as a broken man, as a person who's made terrible mistakes, and turns to us and says, I beg you, don't make the mistake that I made. Don't think that Hevel is about whether Hevel succeeded in changing the world or not. That's not what it's about. Ki zeh sof kol adam. What is it all about? What's life about? Bein tov l'ra, the choice between tov and ra. And Shlomo HaMelech, if you read the Pesukim carefully, you see that he asked originally to choose between tov and ra, which is exactly the choice of the Eitz Hadaat. He wants this chachma, his dad, to choose between Tov and Ra, and he wants to choose Tov, but in the end, he chooses Ra. It says explicitly, Vayas Shlomo hara b'nei Adonai, v'lo milei acharei Adonai k'david aviv. In the end, he chooses Ra. How does he choose Ra? Because he did what Adam and Chava did. He went with what looked like Tov to him, not what Hashem told him was Tov. And therefore, what does Shlomo HaMelech tell us at the end of Kohelet? Sof davar kol nishma et Elohim yira vet mitzotav shemor ki zeh kol adam. What is it all about? It's about doing what Hashem commanded us. It's about doing what Hashem told us to do. What Hashem told us is tov, not what we think is tov. Ki ekol maselim yaviv mishpat al kol nelam im tov v'im ra. The perspectives on Hevel have everything to do with what Shlomo HaMelech thought he should do in life, and what he realized at the end was his mistake, and how in fact he should have lived his life. That it wasn't so important whether he built the Beit HaMikdash or not, whether he created this state of Eretz Yisrael being in with prosperity. Oh, of course, those are wonderful things. We hope we have them. But much more important than that is et mitzotav shemor. Much more important than that is to listen to what Hashem told us. And that was his mistake. And we can understand. We can understand how he made that mistake. But in the end of the day, that's what Shlomo is warning us about. That's the idea of the Eitz Hadaat. And therefore, I'd like to return to the top of page 2 for one moment. And please really focus for 2 minutes. I want to just wrap it all up. Mamash, just for 2 minutes. Says the Midrash. Zot chukat ha-Torah, the mitzvah paraduma. Rabbi Yitzchak Patach, kol zeh nisiti b'chachma, amarti echkama v'hi rechoka mimeni. K'tiv v'yitein Elohim chachma l'shlomo. Listen very carefully. This, I think, is the real pshat in the Midrash, or at least the deeper pshat in the Midrash than we started with. It's not about whether Shlomo Melech understands the time of the mitzvah, whether he can knows Pshat and the Pesuk. That's not the point. It's much deeper than that. It's saying that what is the issue in Shlomo Melech's life? What is it that Shlomo Melech didn't get? Amarti Echama. He thought, he asked for Chachma to begin with. He wanted to choose between Tov and Ra. And he was given this tremendous chachma, but there's one thing that had to come from him that he missed. What did he miss? He missed the lesson of Zot Chukat HaTorah, the lesson of the Paraduma. The Paraduma that tells us the antidote to the chait of the Eitz Hadaat. The Paraduma that tells us that if we want to live as we're supposed to, Ki Zeh Kol Adam, what do we need to do? We need to choose Tov and Ra based on Mitzvotav Shemor, what Hashem commands us, not based on what we think. That's what the Paraduma teaches us. It teaches us that if we want to remove the Tumah from the world, the way to do it is by listening to what Hashem tells us is tamei and is tahor, and if He tells us to take this thing that's mitamei and that represents chayit and use it to remove, to be mitchatei, to remove chayit and to remove tumah, then that's what we have to do, and that's how we remove tumah. That's the other side of the coin of the Eitz HaDaat story. The paraduma is the other side of the coin. It's the opposite of the Eitz HaDaat story. And therefore, what does Shlomo Melech do? With all this chachma, he repeats the mistake of Adam and Chava. And therefore, says the Midrash, what is it that Shlomo Melech failed to grasp? He failed to grasp the message of paraduma. That's the essence of the story of Shlomo Melech, and that's what he is coming to correct in writing Sefer Kohelet. In turning to us and writing this very autobiographical work, which from beginning to end keeps on talking about, I did this and I did that and I tried this and I tried that and I made this and that. Shlomo Melech is saying to us, I was too focused on the ends, on the changing things, on correcting things, and not enough on how I was going about it, on whether I was making the right decision, whether I was doing it the way that Hashem told me to do it or not. And that was my fundamental mistake. He's turning to us and saying, Chevra, don't make the mistake that I made. Learn the lesson of Paraduma. Don't repeat the mistake of Adam and Chava. Ki zeh kol adam. Chag Sameach, everyone.